The 2022 Pro Wrestling Year in Review series returns with a stop in July. And of course, July was dominated by one story, a story that is without question the biggest of the year, and possibly the biggest of the last 10 years, 20 years, who knows. But Vince McMahon announcing his retirement from WWE, actually was a resignation, and all the follow-up from that, everything that led up to it, the day he announced his retirement, Brock Lesnar walking off SmackDown, everything. And then, of course, the new creative regime. What would happen there? SummerSlam, just weeks after this happened. Of course, that would lead to much bigger stories down the road. We talk all about that. Of course, we talk about NXT, AEW, and the fallout from Forbidden Door and the build towards All Out. Of course, we talk about Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor, featuring the rematch between the FTR and the Briscoes, 2 out of 3 falls. And the controversy around Jonathan Gresham asking for his release. We chat about that. Of course, Impact Japan, the junk drawer, which included Ric Flair's last match and everything that happened around that. Joining me is returning John Alba. John, obviously very well known to pro wrestling fans. And John and I talk about this and all kinds of other stuff as well. So let's get right to it. The month of July, Pro Wrestling Year Review Series returns right now. Well, the year interview series rolls on. We have arrived in July. Of course, not July as I look at my window here, about 1 inch of snow on the ground. And obviously, we talk about change. And a lot of things have changed. And a lot of things have changed for my guest at this time. John Alba makes his return to the podcast. And John is I met him for the first time. Consider us friends at this point, I would say.
Of course.
And things are good, John. I mean, yeah, again, a big year of change for you, and yeah, this is good stuff.
Yeah, man, wild year. It was 2022. I feel like the last few years we've said that about. Oh man, no year's gonna get crazier than this year, and then 2022 is like, I see you, but watch this. And this particular month that we're gonna be covering on this podcast might have been the most newsworthy month in wrestling history, quite frankly.
Yeah, I would say so, to say the least. Why don't you explain kind of what, when it comes to your, how things have changed for you? I know you talked about the last time you were here, but kind of give people an update on what's new with you and how things are going and hey, all the change in your life.
I'm kind of a free agent right now in the wrestling world. I'm still doing work with Podcast Heat and ad-free shows. I'm still the host of The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. Doing strictly business with Eric Bischoff, but your boy is open for inquiries should anyone be interested, given my versatile background across all different forms of journalism, broadcast, written, editorial, whatever it may be. I launched a coaching service called the Alba Media School, which is a one-on-one consultation service for people looking to improve their editorial, on-air, or public speaking skill set. And I've also got a Patreon, WrestlingAccordingToAlba.com, where we do a bunch of fun stuff, including some tape studies, which is like a pitching coach watching a pitcher's film and breaking it down, but with pro wrestling. So it's pretty freaking cool.
That's cool. All kinds of different stuff. Yeah, looking forward to seeing that develops in the year ahead. But yeah, you mentioned change. So again, we're looking at July. And for those that have listened to June's podcast, obviously it was the beginning of the end of Vince McMahon and WWE. And this month marked the official end of Vince McMahon, in a sense, in WWE. Vince McMahon initially announcing his retirement, which was soon later to be revealed to be a resignation due to SEC and federal inquiries. And Nick Khan and Stephanie McMahon taking over as co-CEOs, chairman of the board. Stephanie took over as that chairwoman of the board. And this just, you know, I kind of included all these in one section because there was so much just fallout from it. I know people kind of obviously know what happened to Vince, but just some of the things around the swirling around it. You had Triple H being named head of WWE Creative and then later EVP of Talent Relations. And after everything happened, he reportedly promised more transparency during a talent meeting held at Raw. Again, kind of the impetus, but kind of the latest big push on this was that Vince McMahon, another Wall Street Journal report came out, agreed to pay $12 million in hush money to four women. Again, this came after the previous announcement. It was just $3 million. But initially $3 million, then obviously increased to $12 million, and it became very obvious that there was going to be little chance for the chairman to work his way out of this no matter what. After the retirement that same day, if you remember, it was on a Friday, Brock Lesnar walking out of SmackDown. This was in Boston, Massachusetts, following this announcement. Eventually, as Triple H would explain, he was allowed back in, or not allowed back in. He came back to, they talked. They talked about things, knew there was a plan ahead, and again, so far, so good with Brock. Stephanie McMahon appeared on SmackDown and led a thank you Vince chant, which is a little bit odd considering all the circumstances around things. Tony Khan, I forgot about this. He tweeted out that now that Tony Khan was, he said he was the longest tenured CEO in pro wrestling, which a lot of people thought was okay, just a little too soon, a little odd. And later he said, "Well, I just thought it was a factual statement and just a note to promote Rampage." But that's all it was. I can't say anything else about it. So that was kind of a nice little footnote to all this stuff. Vince McMahon Netflix documentary series before this was reportedly pulled from the schedule. Company had to restate financial statements due to the unrecorded McMahon expenses. That's what they're calling all these hush money pacts and all this type of stuff. Company stock rose following the retirement. We learned afterwards that McMahon was heavily edited by the WWE creative team due to insensitive language, incorrect info, and so on and so forth. And then Linda McMahon, who we don't really see a lot in terms of WWE speak anymore, commented. She was asked at a, I think it was an America First luncheon or event or something like that. She was pressed by a reporter on it. Really kind of gave a non-comment on it. It was just kind of, again, this very strange relationship these two have with each other, or, you know, quote unquote with each other. So it was just a whole bunch of stuff that happened in the wake of Vince being let go. Obviously the biggest story of the year, biggest story of the last 10 years, 20, I don't know how, I mean, it's right up there with, obviously, to me, like, you know, the Benoit story and everything like that in terms of pop culture crossover. But when you kind of saw that Vince had announced his retirement/resignation, what do you remember what you were thinking?
Yeah, it was one of those things where it was, okay, well, maybe he's retired, but we know that he's still going to have his hand. Especially, it was that statement. I think they made very clear at the time that Vince was going to remain in charge of creative and oversee creative despite retiring. So I was like, okay, well, then this is strictly a retirement in name and nothing more than that. It's strictly a formality. It wasn't until Paul Levesque was named the head of creative that I said, okay, now something is probably going to change here. And even then, you're somewhat hesitant of it, because remember all the other times, Paul Heyman's the head of creative, Eric Bischoff's going to be in charge of creative, even then. But then it became apparent that these were some legitimate financial accusations that were levied against Vince McMahon, that it's amazing what people can get away with until the shareholders get involved. And when the shareholders get involved, then all of a sudden tangible change actually starts to happen. But I think when this did happen, Josh, for the first time in a very long time, this massive shift in attention towards WWE occurred in what I think most would look back on as in a pretty positive manner, where it was a matter of whatever the circumstances may be, these are changes that may change and alter the course of the company, the trajectory of the company drastically from top to bottom. And that's exactly what happened.
You sensed excitement, right? I mean, that's what I think we felt, because it was this, you know, I think there was always this optimism when Vince was gone, that eventually when he was going to be gone, that, and I think most people, not to be, you know, too morbid, I think most people assumed it was going to be when he passed away, because there was no way he was going to relinquish control, right? He's just one of those guys. But that they were looking forward to a day in which somebody else was running the creative to see if it could be better, you know? And I think there was optimism for once. I think we've seen that with, obviously, with ratings and interest level, I would say. Obviously, there's been some changes as things have gone along, but It's a phrase. It was a new day for WWE and a good opportunity for them.
Yeah. And I think it's worth noting that the company almost reached a point of no return. Had some of these drastic changes and personnel changes that the Vince McMahon regime wanted to make in those final months actually occurred, a lot of these people that have been brought back or the system changing and how it has, a lot of that wouldn't have even been possible to occur. So it happened at just the right time for the most part, mm-hmm. where Paul Levesque and his team were able to kind of hit the reset button and formulate things in the way they wanted to. Like, think about this. If the entire developmental system had been completely cleaned, which it wasn't quite there yet, but it was certainly on the way there, restructuring it in the way that they've wanted to and what we're seeing right now, it would have taken years to recoup that. But I think it was just the right timing for these changes to occur in Paul Levesque and company's favor, where we are seeing the ramifications today, and they're not nearly as drastic as what they would have been.
Yeah, and think of all the dominoes after this, right? Not only WWE, and you mentioned NXT, but AEW talent, right? There was this thing where people were abandoning ship because they were just they didn't think they were going to get an opportunity in WWE, and it was just time. They knew it was time, and there was a creative raft out there being AEW, the Indies, or something like that. But now, you know, when he's gone, look what's just happened in the past couple months. There's been tampering. There's been people going back. We just saw the whole William Regal situation play out. And people want to go back because there's an affinity for Paul Levesque. Now, at some point, there's going to be some of that balance out where people are going to go back and they're like, oh, I thought it was going to be much different. And then they're going to find there's still a boatload of talent. There's a boatload of talent in NXT that's waiting to come up. And it's just, I think it's a reality of the business that there's a ton of talent right now, and it's just hard to find spots. But so many different trajectories. Think of the people in NXT, their opportunities. Some of the people in WWE, it was just a domino effect throughout kind of the industry.
And it also was the first time that WWE in a very long time had goodwill with fans. I think goodwill is one of the most underrated things a wrestling company can have. Because when you have goodwill, it affords you the opportunity to screw something up every now and then creatively.
Yeah.
And fans will say, okay, you know what? That wasn't for me. That was a blunder. But I'm going to come back because I know they're going to give me something else good. And when you have that, you earn an affinity in the eyes of the fans. And I think that was something that allowed AEW to succeed for a very long time. And I think AEW probably lost a little bit of that goodwill over the summer. Whereas we saw this shift over to WWE and Paul Levesque, where he's saying all these things and people know, hey, Paul Levesque's NXT had a really good track record, so I can trust that. And as a result, you saw that shift occur. You mentioned Paul Levesque promised more transparency to talent and to media. I think that much has been extremely apparent so far. And here we are as we record this 6 months out from this. I would very much agree that we've seen tangible shifts in how that part of the company is represented.
100%. Let's go through some of the other happenings of the month. And again, coming very shortly after this was SummerSlam, which is obviously not a small event. But, you know, I didn't expect massive shifts to happen overnight because obviously big ships turn slowly and you can't all.
Oh, but they did.
They did. Yeah. So SummerSlam, obviously we had Roman Reigns retaining his the Undisputed Universal title in the Last Man Standing match over Brock Lesnar. Obviously, this was notable for the big forklift spot near the end. You still got that visual of the ring. That was a spectacle, to say the least. We had Liv Morgan retaining the SmackDown Women's title over Ronda Rousey. And then there was a bit of a disputed finish at the end by the referee getting involved, and Ronda attacked her. So that was kind of obviously a feud that would continue. So obviously, yeah, Jeff Jarrett appeared for every promotion possible, refereeing the Undisputed Tag Team title match. We had WWE postponing the Rollins versus Riddle match. And then we had some returns. Bayley, Dakota Kai, and Io Shirai returning after a long absence off. Obviously, Bayley due to injury, Dakota Kai and Io Shirai. Obviously, Shirai getting the call-up. There was some talk about her contract expiring soon, and she hadn't signed an offer. So it was a thought that she might leave, but obviously, you know, we're talking about trajectories changing. That was a big part of it. And then Dakota Kai, who had been released, obviously bringing her back. Edge returned as well. Pat McAfee and Logan Paul were victorious as celebrities continued their reign over WWE and so on. But yeah, SummerSlam, I remember, you know, it was long, but for the most part, it was good. And it was kind of just, it was again, optimism for the future, I would say. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. And I was there in attendance for it. And even that opening segment with the women where you saw Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch have a great match and then followed it with the returns, it immediately felt fresh. And if I'm not mistaken, Triple H may have tweeted something along the lines of keep watching or something like that, where it was noticeable that there was going to be an intentional change in the direction of creative, which I think gave people a lot of optimism. And I think that this SummerSlam show, while not a perfect show, was definitely a big step in the right direction of what was to come for WWE creative the rest of the year.
All right, let's go through some of the other stuff in the month, and I'll kick it over to you for thoughts. We'll split this up into two chunks. We had the Maximum Male Models debuted. Again, some of this is before the whole Vince thing happened. Kind of keep that in mind. So the Triple M debuted. Sophia Cromwell was revealed later in the month as Maxine Dupri. There was a rumor that Max Dupri was going to be leaving the group, but that did not happen, obviously, until a little bit later on. We had WWE Money in the Bank. Obviously, this was the last Vince McMahon pay-per-view. Liv Morgan and Austin Theory won the Money in the Bank ladder matches respectively, and Morgan actually cashed in that night to win the SmackDown women's title from Ronda Rousey. Baron Corbin attacked Pat McAfee after the show, expected and accepted the SummerSlam challenge, and then Bobby Lashley winning the U.S. title on that night. Shotzi Blackheart replied to fans over botched criticisms in that Money in the Bank ladder match, and eventually she assured fans she was fine after deactivating her Twitter account. Big E said surgery was off the table for his broken neck and then revealed that Rich Holland sent him a quote-unquote big package of red meat to apologize for his broken neck that he suffered at the hands of Rich Holland by accident. And then Big E also said he was at peace if he never wrestles again. Ric Flair's woo was added back to WWE's signature open, and Flair said he personally thanked Vince McMahon for adding him back in. Obviously, that was before all this stuff happened. There was a report that Tyson Fury was in talks for a return to WWE this summer. Paige officially said goodbye to WWE as her contract lapsed, and she said, you let me live out my dreams. Board of directors lost a member and former ESPN exec, and really just kind of a very important figure in sports media, Connor Schell, resigning to work on some other projects. Sasha Banks and Naomi were removed from the internal roster. And then after Triple H and crew took over, the company was reported they were planning to make attempts to reconcile, again, with a new leadership in place. And then Banks and Naomi appearances were announced for the C2E2 convention. The aforementioned Pat McAfee signed a multi-year contract extension. Mick Foley signed a new Legends contract. It's revealed there were no issues between Natalya and the aforementioned Liv Morgan following a very strange live event finish that saw looked like Natalya got pretty upset, just stormed out of the ring. I don't think I really got a full explanation for that, but that was kind of a thing that happened. And then the company announced they were hosting tryouts for college athletes during SummerSlam week. Thoughts on any of that, John?
I was at that tryout, actually, and it was very fascinating to get some insight on that. And it, to my knowledge, yeah, I don't think there were any indie talent there. I think it was pretty much exclusively just college athletes. So getting some insight on that was pretty fascinating. Yeah, a lot of things you rattled off there that, again, feel like a fever dream just because of how much actually happened in the past calendar year. I did think it was fascinating that the company didn't make any more efforts to retain Paige before she went elsewhere. I think she had wanted to stay, even if it was going to be in an advisory role or whatever role that may have been. Man, so much to consume from what you just said there. Great news, obviously, that Big E doesn't need surgery, and hopefully one day we get to see him again. But if we don't, we know how much of a great talent he is and how much he's contributed over the years. Yeah, I think that when you look at some of that stuff, it's just ultimately most of that barely even registers a blip on the radar this year, which is crazy.
Well, let's get to some more stuff that might barely a blip on the radar as we wrap up the WWE portion. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, turned down an offer to host the Emmys. There was a big thing about potentially the TV-14 rating returning for Raw and USA Network. However, that was never finalized, despite, I guess, circulating an internal memo. And then SummerSlam was briefly listed as having a TV-14 rating. That was kind of a big thing as the Attitude Era is coming back, but never really came to fruition. Rita Chatterton addressed her Vince McMahon allegations resurfacing. Again, that was prior to the resignation. Cody Rhodes said he almost hemorrhaged during surgery for his torn pectoral muscle. Real Sports, for HBO's Real Sports, announced they were working on a Vince McMahon story. Seth Rollins apologized after what he called a harsh and abrupt interaction with some fans. WWE announced, again, continuing their 20th anniversary celebrations, announced the month of Mysterio to celebrate his 20 years with the company. And then Rhea Ripley returned to Raw and attacked Rey Mysterio. So there you go. Happy 20th. WrestleMania 40 was announced for, of all places, Philadelphia. Going to be a two-night event coming up in, 2 years from now, give or take, a little over a year. Dwight Howard, NBA star, took part in a WWE tryout. I believe it was part of that SummerSlam tryout as well. Drew McIntyre earned a Universal title match against Roman Reigns at Clash at the Castle for September. Again, he had laid out the challenge to Reigns, and of course everything was set into motion for that to happen. The company purchased rights to a documentary about Kurt Angle. Goldberg revealed that he was still under WWE contract and was, quote-unquote, waiting for that one call to happen in order to come back for another match. John Cena and his wife had a second wedding in Vancouver. Cody Rhodes, his return, earned the Best WWE Moment ESPY Award. Sami Zayn was out for a few weeks with arm injuries. The company announced returns to Mexico, Scotland, and Germany. Again, kind of their first shows there since the pandemic had essentially ended. Day one was announced as returning to State Farm Arena in Atlanta. Of course, that would not happen. And the This Is Awesome series was premiering on Peacock in late July, early August. Anything of that grab your attention?
Not particularly. We did get to see kind of the repackaging and regenesis of Rhea Ripley, which I think most would argue has been pretty successful so far. WrestleMania in Philadelphia, given a shot at another quote-unquote cold weather WrestleMania, see if that ultimately comes to fruition. Great logo. I was there when they revealed the logo at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view, and it is a really, really nice-looking logo. The TV-14 stuff was really fascinating. I think from the people I've spoken to, they really believe that was going to happen, and someone just jumped the gun on it, and I guess in the process ended up squashing things. I don't think WWE needs to be TV-14. I think it has been more than efficient as a PG programming, and I think people were like, we want the Attitude Era back. Kind of just living in yesteryear, ultimately, at the end of the day. But yeah, I'd say from that crop of news, again, most of that is relatively inconsequential. The Rita Chariton story was a pretty harrowing read for those who did take a moment to look through that, and it definitely was pretty heavy, and I think it probably leveraged public opinion furthermore against Vince McMahon for those who did actually take the time to read it. So, yeah, I'd say none of that, not super, super consequential, other than maybe one or two there.
All right, let's go through NXT. So a few developments in the month and the soon-to-be revamped Black and Gold brand once again. Great American Bash, Braun Breaker, say that 20 times fast, defended against Cameron Grimes, defended the title successfully. The Creeds retained their tag team titles. Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez won the NXT Women's Tag Team titles. However, that would soon end as the two split up.
A day later.
I know, right? JD McDonagh debuted on the show and attacked Braun Breaker, setting up a program between them. In the future, Axiom, a vignette for the former A-Kid, aired during the show. Allison Janger talked about her release, saying, "I quote-unquote, I feel like I got brought to Florida and then left to die." So that's a heavy statement there. Ilya Dragunov had to relinquish the NXT UK title due to injury. And Tyler Bate eventually won it in a small tournament or something like that. The best part about this, again, this wasn't in July, was that eventually when they started building to, I think it was August, to the Worlds Collide thing, and the tournament had not fully aired on NXT TV, but they just announced Tyler Bate as the UK champion. I thought that was, if that told you anything about how NXT UK was viewed in the whole WWE universe, I think that was pretty
not
addictive.
Great.
Yeah. Noam Dar retained the Heritage Cup. The company's next streaming event was planned for late August. The daughter of The Rock, Simone Johnson, made her appearance and cut a promo at an NXT house show. The Rock was very proud, and he still had no issue with her name being Ava Rain. He was asked about that, I believe, on The Tonight Show. Sol Ruka made her debut on NXT Level Up, and if you happen to be listening to this, mid-December, check out the recent GIF of her, this incredible flip stunner move. It was something to be seen that hit the internet this past week. The grizzled young veterans got their new in-ring names. They're called the Dyad. Triple H, at before Vince, left, not working directly with WWE NXT. And then afterward, WWE NXT expected to somewhat return to Triple H's previous vision. So a lot of things happening there. Zoe Stark made her return, winning a 20-woman Battle Royal. The NXT Premium Live event was set to take place again on the same day as AEW All Out. So that conflict continued. Two NXT title matches were set for a Heatwave special. again, as you alluded to, new women's tag team champions were set to be crowned on a early August edition of NXT after they had just been won by Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade. And then Nathan Frazier also returned from injury as well. Thoughts on any of that?
It was definitely a pretty transformative month for NXT. I think you got to see some of the big changes starting to occur right away. As we would find out, NXT essentially moves under the direction of Shawn Michaels, who I think, by the way, has been a great representative for the company in the role that he's in and has done an excellent job with press and really seems to have a lot of the talent enjoying work for him. Has all the creative been perfect? No, but I am starting to see the investment pay off in this current batch of NXT talent, and I do believe that this current NXT talent is the closest thing we've had to black and gold caliber in-ring performers in a really long time, especially as evidenced as we taped this by this past week. So I do think August was a pretty transformative month in that sense in getting NXT's identity back.
I would agree. Yeah, I think he's been, to your point, really transparent on the media calls, and I think it's just it just seems like it's him talking. It's not a filter through a.
I don't think he knows how to be a corporate suit.
I don't think he does either, and it's great.
I think that plays into it well.
I think it's great. And now we flip to AEW, and we'll take these. To me, there really wasn't anything here that super stood out, as in, like, you know, June when you had Forbidden Door, and then you had the post Double or Nothing Dynamite, which just changed so many different things with the not just the MJF promo, but Punk getting hurt. Complete sliding doors that we talked about when they did the June episode. So we'll go through these. These are in a chronological order. We'll split up this first chunk and kick it over to you, John. Learned that the Young Bucks originally planned to win the IWGP tag team titles at Forbidden Door, but the plans changed. That pay-per-view did an estimated 125,000 to 127,000 pay-per-view buys. Obviously a nice success there for a very first time event. Tony Khan said those events will remain in North America. There was some talk about having something in Japan, but he said those will remain in North America. It was revealed that Tony Khan worked with Bruce Pritchard on AEW talent appearing in the John Cena tribute videos in June, which included Jericho, Paul White, Brian Danielson, and Mark Henry. Mark Henry's never did actually air on TV, though. AEW announced a partnership with Diamond Select Toys. Roosh made his AEW in-ring debut in a battle royal on Rampage. That battle royal was won by Brody King. It was the first ever Royal Rampage battle royal to earn an interim title shot at Jon Moxley the following week. Pac made the very first defense of the All-Atlantic title in Rev Pro Wrestling. Marco Stunt said AEW using his name on Dynamite was quote-unquote kind of lame. Tony Khan confirmed that Santana suffered a pretty bad knee injury at Blood and Guts. Wardlow won the TNT Championship on Dynamite. Jeff Hardy's arraignment and bond hearing was rescheduled for August. That was a story that would keep on going and going at this point. Still really hasn't happened
yet. Don't worry
about it. AEW made debuts in, or announced to be making debuts in September in Buffalo, Albany, New York, and then the big one, Toronto, coming up in October. Chris Jericho detailed surviving a pulmonary embolism that happened during a tour with Fozzy. Obviously, he was in hospital, and I think that really, if you listen to these stories and him talking about how it just kind of, there was a kickoff for him losing a ton of weight, getting in better shape, and I think really setting up what turned out to be a pretty awesome year altogether for Chris Jericho in the ring. AEW and Stardom discussed a plan to work together. Penelope Ford was not medically cleared to wrestle yet. We learned that. Miyu Yamashita earned a future women's world title shot with her win over Thunder Rosa in a non-title match in Japan for TJPW. Warner Bros. Discovery asked for an AEW gimmick match to tie in with Shark Week. We had AEW Fighter Fest. Dustin Rhodes had to miss due to illness. And then I put this in there, the Chris Jericho, Eddie Kingston, barbed wire match, which I didn't really love that much. I just thought it was a kind of a kerfluffle at the end, and Kingston took this, or Jericho took this very unnecessary bump at the end. It was just kind of like, it didn't work at all for whatever reason. And Chris Jericho revealing he suffered a broken nose in that match. And then Dax Harwood revealed he was working through with a torn labrum. And then Dante Martin reportedly suffering a knee injury as well. So injuries always a constant in pro wrestling. Thoughts about any of that first chunk?
This was a pretty transformative time for AEW with CM Punk being out and a whole bunch of other things as a result of that had to kind of change and trickle down the card. Bryan Danielson was out. We saw Claudio come in. So they were definitely on the fly rolling with a lot of different punches. And I thought as a result, it kind of made for some inconsistent programming on television. Again, I don't necessarily blame AEW for that. There were a lot of things that happened all at once. But as you read off there in that list, it was just one thing after another that was like, okay, this happened, then this happened, then this happened. Chris Jericho got hurt and all that. Penelope Ford wasn't able to compete. So, yeah, I will look back at the summer of AEW as just kind of being this state of where are we going? And I know we're not even done going through this month, but I think a lot of what you said kind of reflects that because of all the injuries, especially.
Yeah, let's flip through the other half of the month. All Out officially announced for September. Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland won the AEW tag team titles by defeating the Young Bucks. I had to actually look and see who they beat because I completely forgot who were champions at that time. Again, so many things happened. Jim Ross revealed that his schedule changes to have him more on Rampage were done to made both to give Dynamite and Rampage a boost. I don't think it's his fault, but you know, Rampage is not exactly seeing too much of a boost from that. Adam Cole said he opted against having surgery for a torn labrum, and he was very confident, quote unquote, that he'd be back in the ring soon. We are still waiting for that, obviously, as he recovers from a pretty serious concussion. Andrade El Idolo was out with ankle inflammation. Cole Two Dimes Carter and Parker Boudreaux made their debuts at the AEW Dark taping. Actually, Carter made his return to the company at those tapings, but Boudreaux making his debut shortly after he made his MLW debut, which aired months and months and months after that. We've talked about that already. Tony Khan said he was high on the idea of the new Trustbusters trio. AQA announced she was stepping away from pro wrestling. Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks Trios match was reportedly targeted for All Out. Omega said he was hoping to be there again, recovering from injury. There was no details as to when his official return would happen. Jungle Boy returned after his own injury absence. Matt Jackson out for a few weeks after suffering a stinger in that aforementioned tag team match. Brian Danielson finally cleared return after his issues, concussion issues, and so on. As now he was going to be facing Danny Garcia on Dynamite. Tony Khan said he was, quote unquote, amused by WWE creative change narratives and wrestlers potentially going back. So put a pin in that one. CM Punk revealed that he shattered his foot on that aforementioned AEW Dynamite in June. He was relearning how to walk, so obviously no quick and pending return for him. And this is an interesting one. He said that WWE culture doesn't change at all, quote unquote, with Vince McMahon's retirement. So for those people that think that he might go back at some point, just kind of keep that in mind. The AEW Trios Championships were just announced on Dynamite. That was kind of a throwaway segment. It just wasn't a lot of bravado behind it. But anyway, they revealed the champions are going to be crowned at All Out. Hook won the FTW title at Dynamite Fight for the Fallen. Road Dogg said he was quote-unquote begging Tony Khan for a job with AEW. Obviously, that would change a lot with the Levesque era in charge at WWE. AEW contracts, we learned, could be extended due to injury, just like in WWE. And then Jake Hager confirmed his next Bellator MMA fight for October. We're still waiting for that fight to happen. Thoughts on any of that?
Again, more injuries. And that was kind of the story of AEW's summer. The Trios Championship was interesting because, to my knowledge, the Trio titles had been created a long time prior to this announcement. Like, they had them in the bank for a while.
Yeah.
So they must have just been waiting for the right time, which I would assume meant the Elite being back in full, which, as we know, there would be a short pivot quickly after. Yeah, the Road Dogg story with Tony Khan, just hearing that again popped me. It's really crazy seeing all of these. And yeah, and how badly does some of this age, like Khan being amused by the creative changes and wrestlers potentially going back, we know all the chaos that would ensue coming off of those comments, and some of the wrestlers that would potentially even try to go into business for themselves in order to make something like that happen. It was a lot about the impending return of Kenny Omega, though, which was, I feel like, not as big of a story this year as it probably should have been, given Kenny's impact on AEW and the extent of the injuries that he had suffered. It was all kind of centered around that, which eventually we would see, I believe, in August. So, yeah, leading right up to that, it's kind of where things start and end for AEW, injuries.
Very true. Let's flip over to the other Tony Khan-owned property, ROH, because they had Death Before Dishonor. Obviously, that was a big deal for them. And some interesting news coming out of this. So the pay-per-view did over 36,000 buys, give or take. Claudio Castagnoli winning the Ring of Honor World title by defeating Jonathan Gresham. We'll talk more about Mr. Gresham in just a second. Dalton Castle and the boys winning the six-man titles. Of course, they just lost them this past weekend. FTR defeated the Briscoes in a 2 out of 3 falls rematch for the Ring of Honor titles, or retaining those titles in that match. And then Prince Nana, of all people, came back because he purchased Tully Blanchard Enterprises. The company announced the revamping of Honor Club. Again, it's funny, we're talking about, you know, July's Death Before Dishonor, and a lot of this stuff actually came to fruition or changed just this past weekend with Final Battle. Tony Khan confirmed the Briscoes are signed to long-term deals with ROH. Jonathan Gresham, as I just mentioned, asked for his AEW ROH release after the match. He reportedly cussed out Tony Khan, was not happy with how everything went down with the, I guess, the build to the Castagnoli match, and just maybe the visual of him being, obviously, Castagnoli being a huge guy and all this stuff. He was not happy with his treatment, asked for his release, and eventually got it. And then Tully Blanchard was reportedly done with the company, hence the purchase by Prince Nana. So it's an interesting month for ROH, and again, it's going to be, I think, a more interesting 2023. I think this last 6 months has been, you know, interesting. I keep saying the word interesting, just how fans have taken to the inclusion of ROH on AEW TV, and I think Tony Khan kind of finally started realizing that with some of the quotes that he made this week about having less of it on there. This TV deal, which is just going to turn out to be their, essentially on their own streaming platform with a $9 or a $10 per month charge. And yeah, until they really get TV, it's just a, you know, it's a promotion that is kind of built up in spurts on AEW TV, which to me, I think kind of clogged up the product at sometimes. Obviously, Chris Jericho win the title. But yeah, it's interesting, again, with Final Battle this past weekend, to kind of look back at what happened in July and see that there was some changes, but not a lot of changes at all.
Yeah, Ring of Honor is pretty much like a periphery promotion at this point, which is really fascinating. I do remember this Death Before Dishonor show being pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And the Claudio match being very good, and the FTR Briscoes match obviously being great. Some things changing on the fly, as you mentioned, with Tully was given this big introduction in April, and then all of a sudden, oh, see ya, he's gone. So that was probably something that changed on the fly. But I do remember this show kind of setting the tone for what Tony Khan's Ring of Honor would look like. How different that is from AEW, I'm not entirely sure. There's definitely some small differences, but not all that much, truth be told. But all in all, I thought this was a good way to set your foot out there and say, this is what Ring of Honor is going to look like. You can expect high-quality wrestling still, which, say what you want about Ring of Honor's presentation so far in the last 6 months, but it has delivered good wrestling across the board.
I agree. Impact Wrestling. Not a lot happened with this company this month. They had, against all odds, Josh Alexander retaining the world title against Joe Doering. Brian Myers won the digital media title. Chris Harris, Wildcat Chris Harris, returning in a multi-man match that, of course, included his longtime buddy and partner, James Storm, in America's Most
knock,
Wanted.
Knock, knock, who's there?
Exactly. And then Jordan Grace retaining the Knockouts title over Tasha Steelz. Kushida and Allen Angels made their Impact Wrestling debuts. Jordan Grace launched a CTE fundraiser following a controversial tweets regarding the Chris Benoit situation and all that, if you guys remember that. Overdrive was announced for November, brand new event for them. Bound for Glory was headed to Danbury, Connecticut, was the story, but it actually wasn't. It was actually headed to upstate New York instead, in Albany, New York. Josh Alexander versus Alex Shelley for the world title, and Honor No More versus the Bullet Club was announced for Impact Emergence, which was their next event on the schedule. And then Killer Kelly re-signed a new multi-year deal with the company. Again, not a lot happening there, but thoughts about any of that?
Now, a great year for Josh Alexander continued. Truly one of the best years in all of pro wrestling, I think. And you saw him continuing to hit his stride here in the summer. The Danbury, Connecticut stuff was so weird because, as someone who went to college in Connecticut, Danbury, Connecticut is not exactly a destination city in Connecticut. I think, and I could be wrong, but I think that's where Bully Ray's training school is.
I think it is. Yeah.
Danbury, Connecticut, which maybe there was some sort of tie-in there. But yeah, that was very weird, and I know ultimately it didn't end up happening there. A good year for Alex Shelley, too. I was happy to see Alex Shelley kind of have a little bit of a bounce back this year. Had some great matches, both singles and tag matches. Not a whole lot else to say on the Impact stretch at this time, the Chris Benoit, Jordan Grace stuff was really, really weird and a very oddly divisive thing on Twitter, because people were taking these very strange positions on Chris Benoit, which sometimes you don't have to take a side or make a comment on something. I think some people recognize that. I wish myself in the past that I would have taken my own advice on that. Sometimes you just don't have to. So that was a very strange situation.
Very true. Let's go through Japan. So usual interesting happenings here. Alex Coughlin, Yuta Nakashima, Yo, and Duki were off New Japan Road matches due to illness and injury. Rocky Romero said that New Japan Strong was playing a pay-per-view set for October. Will Nightingale's TJPW debut was off due to a visa delay. House of Torture won the Never Openweight six-man tag team titles. New Japan said they were going to have cheering sections for two events in September. New Japan Strong's Fighting Spirit Unleashed taping was set for Los Angeles, California. The company announced a return to the UK in October. And then the August announced one of their August G1 shows is going to be held outdoors. Kota Ibushi, I was talking about a shoulder injury, said it was still not good at all. Couldn't even do push-ups, so he was going to have to do more rehab and get some help with that. Dax Harwood was announced for the New Japan Strong High Alert taping. Forbidden Door documentary was announced as being coming to New Japan World streaming service. Michael Elgin was arrested in Japan for theft. Again, not a great year for Michael Elgin, but one of the just very strange, unfortunate story. And we'll talk more about him as the year goes on. The New Japan G1 tournament began. New Japan Strong announced Autumn Attack taping, and that Mystico from CMLL was going to appear on that event. And then probably some of the biggest news of the month for them, that really Stardom, they were going to give them more shine in a lot of ways, pun not intended. New Japan and Stardom are creating the IWGP Women's Championship. Stardom wrestlers are going to compete on all New Japan America cards going forward. And then the company announced the first ever joint show, Historic Crossover, announced for later on during the year. And then Music City Mayhem, which took part as part during the Ric Flair's last match weekend and StarCast weekend in Nashville. And, of course, SummerSlam weekend as well. Jon Moxley defeating El Desperado in a very interesting no DQ match. Violent as always. United Empire defeated FTR and Alex Zane. And then Clark Connors was unable to compete due to injury on that show. Thoughts about any of that? Specifically, the creation of the IWGP women's title.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest story, especially one that, if you believe rumors at this point, may have some pretty significant names attached to it come January.
Yeah.
So I do think that that is certainly noteworthy, especially kind of changing tradition there with New Japan. The United Empire versus FTR and Alex Zane match was really, really good from that Music City Mayhem show. And the G1 tournament beginning, what I loved about this year's G1 was I thought it was a big time coming out party for Jonah in particular. I felt Jonah established himself as one of the best big men in all of pro wrestling this year. And I thought he took advantage of that opportunity given to him in the G1.
Very true. All right. The junk drawer. Everything else that happened. John, I couldn't start anywhere else other than Ric Flair's last match happening on July 31st. Again, Ric Flair and his son-in-law Andrade El Idolo winning the main event, Ric Flair's last match against the team of Jay Lethal. And who else? Jeff Jarrett. I put scary in all caps. I mean, again, people have talked about this to death. It was frightening to watch this match and just Flair's physical condition. Just, it was just uncomfortable and scary. And we are lucky that he didn't die. I'm sure he would have, would have liked, he's like a cowboy, right? If he wants to go out, he wants to go out on the ranch, staring up at the stars or something like that. I'm sure he would like no better end than to be in a pro wrestling ring, but not in this way. This was just bad blood everywhere. But just, it just was uncomfortable to watch. He revealed he was dealing with plantar fasciitis leading into this. And before the Jarrett announcement, he teased a WWE Raw wrestler as his last match opponent. That really was kind of a very, Jarrett worked for the company at the time. I think people were kind of assuming something else. Said that he wanted to do a dive in the match. Charlotte said no. Charlotte, of course, and the family in attendance. Also, Undertaker, Bret Hart, Mick Foley, and Jerry Lawler appeared as well. It was a good undercard. They had a four-way AAA match. The Briscoes are on the card. Josh Alexander, Jordan Grace title defenses. There was a Bunkhouse Battle Royal. And I put here blueprint that I think we're going to see more of these last match style pay-per-views in the years ahead. I don't know if they're going to be as successful as this one, or I guess it depends on the star involved, but this, this whole thing was interesting from a business standpoint, and just from a, but from a, an in-ring with the main event, it was, scary, uncomfortable, put it that way. Your thoughts on that before we get to the rest of this?
Yeah, I thought overall the show was a huge success. It was one of the highest gates ever for a indie match in United States history, or for an indie show, rather, in United States history, which was incredible. The four-way AAA match was just unbelievable, and I really did enjoy Josh Alexander versus Jacob Fatu, even though it had a non-finish. I did enjoy the match quite a bit. I thought two guys who deserve to have that kind of spotlight on them, it was certainly there. As for the main event, it was what it was. And that is really all I have to add on that. It was what it was. I'll say this. You know, people like to rag on Jeff Jarrett for a lot of reasons. I thought Jeff Jarrett was awesome in that match. And in general, in the matches he's been having, there are few people who have gotten the legitimate pro wrestling heat from fans that Jeff Jarrett's able to get. And mm-hmm. I do think he deserves a lot of credit for that.
I would agree. Would you agree that this is going to be a blueprint for other last matches in the future?
100%.
Yep. All right, let me spin through the rest of this junk drawer and a bunch of different stuff here. Obviously, Tessa Blanchard was returning to the ring for Hurricane Pro Wrestling, the wrestling entertainment series. Officially canceled their debut show. That was after Nia Jax and Matt Raywald had called them out essentially for false advertising, completely ghosting them. It was just a complete mess. This is a promotion, the NFT guy and the Authors of Pain. Mojo Rawley was actually over there at the time when this got canceled, and he announced kind of a good, he tried to be very upfront with us. I think he was involved at from behind the scenes as well, announcing a free meet and greet and just try to make the best out of a really kind of strange situation that lasted over months and months and months. PWG 19, Daniel Garcia retained the PWG title, over Takeshita, and then Brody King and Malachi Black retaining the PWG tag team titles over Aussie Open. MLW announced a few TV deals. Iosat TV in the UK, they expand their BN Sports TV program partnership, a merchandise deal with Hot Topic, and also a September Super Series event for Norcross, Georgia. Control Your Narrative announced a 24-show tour. I don't exactly know how many of those shows actually happened. John Cena's Peacemaker was officially started filming their second season for Max, HBO Max, rather. Andy Coppin casting was announced for learned about happening for a Vice-related pro wrestling project. Great Khali was accused of slapping a toll worker in India. That happened. A little bit of GCW news. John Morrison was unable to wrestle at No Signal in the Hills 2 due to injury. John Moxley, however, was announced for GCW Homecoming Part 1, and he also retained his title, I believe it was over Blake Christian, with a win at People versus GCW. Ciclope and Miedo Extremo won the GCW Tag Team titles, and Cole Radrick winning the company's Extreme title in the month of July. Eric Bischoff, a guy that you've talked to once or twice or a dozen times before, announced he was releasing his autobiography, Grateful, in November. Obviously, that just came out. Brandi Rhodes announced she was planning to continue her in-ring career. Ricky Steamboat, very similar worker to Brandi Rhodes, I would say, announced for NWA TV taping. The year of Ricky Steamboat getting back in our wrestling lives would continue in earnest. Trevor Murdoch versus Nick Aldis, a world title match, is announced for NWA 74. However, about a week later, give or take, it was announced that Tyrus would be replacing Nick Aldis in that world title match. And the feud between Nick Aldis and Billy Corgan, all this very strange stuff, would really kick off in earnest. Burke Invitational was also announced as returning for the 74 pay-per-view. Company announced the creation of the women's TV title and also the revival of the United States tag team titles. Jake Atlas issued a formal apology and said his relationship that he had in that domestic abuse case, that it was not abusive in any way. Obviously, a pretty terrible year for Jake Atlas and everyone involved. Nick Wayne was on a flight diverted due to a bomb threat. That was kind of a strange situation. And then The Rock and Dolph Ziggler appeared via video at the roast of Ric Flair, which took place over Ric Flair's retirement weekend, StarCast 5, and all that good stuff. Thoughts about any of that?
I forgot about the Control Your Narrative tour being announced. That also feels like a fever dream at this point, given how things have unfolded. Yeah, I think the thing that stands out is the NWA stuff. weird late summer into fall for NWA. Obviously, this Tyrus stuff has been a very controversial topic in professional wrestling, and I mentioned earlier how goodwill really plays into perception, and I do believe that that's something that continues to be a bit of an issue for them. Aside from that, yeah, getting to see Ricky Steamboat get back in the ring is crazy, and I'm pretty sure there were more plans for him at some point that maybe didn't come to fruition. And yeah, Eric Bischoff put out Grateful in November, and it's a good book. You should all check that out. I, one thing I've always appreciated about Eric is that, and this is not me promoting his book, but I'm just saying, one thing I've always appreciated about him is he's a pretty straightforward business guy, and he's a pretty straight shooter in that sense. So it's enjoyable. I've had a chance to check it out. Man, just what a weird year this was in pro wrestling. And you see these little micro things happening here in August. Even just something like the Great Khali and the Toll Worker. Like, I remember that happening. I didn't remember it until you just brought it back up to me. But it feels like there was a lot of that in 2022. Oh, right. That happened this year.
Yeah, it was, again, the Flair's last match stuff, all that. And that happened in a month that Vince McMahon retired. It was a crazy year. So before we let you go, I want to give you a chance to plug again where people can find you and hear you and the shows you're doing and all that good stuff. The floor is yours.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, man. You know, I always enjoy coming on to chat with you. You can check me out on The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy with Matt Hardy at extremehardy.com every single Friday. Strictly Business with Eric Bischoff every Thursday, 83weeks.com or wherever you get your podcasts as well. Wrestling According to Alba on Patreon. It's a really cool, interactive, in-depth Patreon experience if you're a big diehard pro wrestling fan. And I got the Alba Media School, which if you want to be a podcaster, if you're a young on-air talent or an inexperienced on-air talent, or maybe you're a writer, whatever it may be, you're looking to improve that editorial skill set, here's a chance to have one-on-one consultations with me. I've got more than a decade of media experience in just about every single facet of it. National television, local television, regional television, editorial, written. It's a great opportunity to refine that skill set. AlbaMediaSchool.com. And hopefully looking forward to some exciting things in 2023. So I appreciate you, Josh.
Yeah, appreciate it too. It's great to finally meet you at Full Gear. Again, we met in New Jersey after being in the same room in Yarmouth, Maine, in a much smaller venue for a long time. So it's glad to face it. I'd say the king of Newark. You were right up there with you were floating around from seat to seat and shaking hands, kissing babies and everything. Well done.
Well, Jersey's my territory, so you got to make sure that you're the king of your territory.
That's right. The owner of Thunder Road, put it that way.
That's right.
That's right. Going to the Badlands. Anyway,
I think another guy might lay claim to that throne. But
maybe. Well, John Nava, thanks so much for returning and talking about the month of July.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, big thanks to John Alba for dropping by. And yeah, obviously a lot of big stories there. Flair's last match. Again, obviously the Vince story, it's been talked about to death. And of course, as I'm recording this this outro on Wednesday, John and I recorded that before the news on Tuesday from the Wall Street Journal that two women that claim they were sexually assaulted by McMahon are looking for money or potentially lawsuits, legal demands, I think they're called, and also that he is he's planning to return to WWE, and that he thinks he got bad advice, but when all the, that essentially forced him to resign, and that he thinks all this would have blown over if he had just stayed on. That potential return, I know some people think that's impossible. I don't know. He's obviously the biggest shareholder, but just think of all the, like, your own family, right? And family conflicts. Can you imagine? I just, even before yesterday's story, all the stuff causing rifts in a family, all the stuff with Vince's past that caused rifts in his family. I mean, the whole thing with Linda and his wife and all that stuff and Shane. But now he thinks he's going to come back when his son-in-law and his daughter's running the company and with Nick Khan. And his son-in-law is running creative, and now he thinks he's just going to come, doing the McMahon strut back in. I, I can't see it happening. It's going to be crazy if there's some sort of power struggle, if there's some sort of lawsuit, because I know that I read in our report of the Wall Street Journal report that there can WB may consider a legal action against McMahon for some of the stuff that he did. There's just all types of the story is worth a book alone. And yeah, McMahon family legacy. If there's not a unauthorized narrative series on this family at some point, by the time my time on this earth is done, it will be wasted, completely wasted. This is a fantastic scripted series, and somebody has to be writing this somewhere. Maybe I should start in that. Who knows? Anyway, so again, big thanks to John Alba. Thanks to all you for listening. A lot of choices in your podcast day. We greatly appreciate time to spend with me or any of the podcast hosts here on WrestlingObserver.com. August coming up later this week. Working on the outline for the MMA Year in Review series, part two. Part one is out already. And of course, if this is your first stop, I did six of these before. January, February, March, April, June, May, June. I don't even know how to read a calendar. So check those out as well. And yeah, we got a lot more ahead in the upcoming week. So until next time, which will be a couple days, insert catchphrase here.